On late winter evenings in Ukraine, women huddle in front of candle flames to recreate ancient designs on the most delicate of all canvases, a raw, fertilized chicken egg. They are working to create pisanki, finely decorated eggs for the celebration of Orthodox Easter, Pascha. These beautiful colored eggs have been crafted in Eastern Europe for centuries, but they reached their artistic culmination in Ukraine. A pisanka is created through a meticulous, time-consuming wax-resist process that is so difficult Romanians refer to pisanki as tormented eggs. Applying layer upon layer of melted beeswax poured through a tiny copper funnel heated by a candle flame, the artisan draws or writes traditional patterns on the shell. The egg is then dyed, first with the lightest color, then with darker and darker colors. The color that is covered by wax will remain that way in the egg's final design. There may be as many as 5 or 6 colors, with each new color involving a separate application of wax. The last color to be used will serve as the background for the finished egg. When the process is complete, the wax is removed by very lightly baking the egg and wiping it clean. Only then is the final design revealed. Carrie Frost, writing in Commonweal, continues, "The Hutsul people of Western Ukraine have a legend according to which the very fate of the world depends on the preservation of pisanki. As Olya Dmitriev tells the story in her book, Ukrainian Arts, should the custom cease to exist, evil, in the guise of an ancient vicious monster chained to a cliff, will encompass the world. Each year, the monster's servants encircle the globe, keeping record of the number of pisanki made. When there are few, the monster's chains loosen. When there are many, the monster's chains hold taut, allowing love to reign." It certainly sounds as if there is much at stake in preserving the tradition of pisanki, and the Everhart Museum in Scranton is inviting us to do our part through its makers and masters workshops this winter and spring. Carrie Frost reminds us that pisanki motifs predate Christianity in Ukraine, and that some of the patterns used have been traced to the Bronze Age. Imagine a place that not only holds workshops and classes in the traditional arts, but also has artifacts in its collection that may well date back to the Bronze Age. The Everhart in Scranton is a museum of natural history, science, and art located in Naog Park. Stephanie Colarusso, Director of Programs and Events, Francesca Saldan, newly appointed curator, Peg McDade, distinguished fiber artist and teacher, and Melanie Rosato, curatorial assistant and artist, all paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the Everhart Museum and what's on offer. Stephanie Colarusso.
We are the Everhart Museum, established in 1908, so we celebrated 110 years this year. We are a general museum of natural history, science, and art. So we're a unique museum to northeastern Pennsylvania in that there's not another one like us for about 150 miles. So everything from our taxidermy collection to our fine art collection and our educational programming.
To oversee those collections and help us see a whole array of the Everhart's treasures, Francesca, you've recently come on board as curator. Tell us where you've come from and what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm actually from the Philadelphia area. And so the Scranton area isn't new. I've been coming up here every so often for, I guess, about the past 5 years. So I've grown to love this little part of PA. And then I found the Everhart. So the Everhart, I think one of the things that's most exciting about starting here is the collection, as you guys have mentioned. It's just so all-encompassing, and I don't think you can really find a collection of its breadth anywhere else. I love working with ethnographic material and ancient artifacts, which the Everhart has, but they also have a collection of fine art and natural history specimens that you really can't get under one roof at any other institution. So that was really, really exciting and special, and I knew that it was something I would really like to be a part of.
We look forward to talking with you about many of the ways that your vision will be realized in those galleries in the months and years to come. What was your background? Did you study specifically ethnographic things?
So my undergraduate degree was in anthropology and classics. I thought I wanted to be an archaeologist, and then I took some archaeology classes, and it was mostly just digging through dirt, and it wasn't as glamorous as I thought it would be. It wasn't as Indiana Jones, so I knew I still wanted to work with artifacts, and that's kind of how I fell into museum work. I took on a lot of different internships during my undergraduate career, and then decided to pursue a graduate degree at Columbia University in museum anthropology. So I've worked the gamut of different types of institutions, and previous to my position here, I was working at the Penn Museum in Philadelphia.
Those of us who aren't on the inside of a museum may not know. You do have to, like anything, plan out ahead. So what would you be looking at, just rough guess about when your first show might come to fruition?
Yeah, absolutely. So you are exactly correct. In an ideal world, you plan years and years out. Whether that actually happens is a different story. But we have a bunch of very exciting shows coming up this year, and I'm really hoping to make some headway into 2020 and hopefully beyond that. I have a few ideas up my sleeve.
Is there one artifact that jumped out and you said, that's really special, I want a better look at that, or I want to work with that?
You know, I think that moment has happened quite a lot. I've had a couple chances to go into the storerooms, and every time I go in, I find something new and something different. I do recognize a lot of the pieces, which is very exciting because I think they have a lot of potential. And I think that the people in the community would really enjoy seeing them on view. But there are definitely pieces in there that surprise me. There's a ton of works on paper and paintings that are stunning, but I think I will definitely find a few more favorites over the next couple of weeks when I dig around.
Well, welcome again, Francesca. In addition to having us come and just see what you have as part of your collection, you have community days, but you also offer us a chance to explore our own possibilities in terms of creativity or to learn more about things. And that is for the youngest to grown-ups as well. What kinds of things do you like to do in terms of education like that?
So we have a great range of educational programs, again, from preschool up to adult. And one of the things that we're really pushing now are adult programs. There's been such a great interest in adult programs in general. And over the last few years, we've kind of changed our focuses to having some master classes with some really amazing artists. And they've become so popular that we created a brand new series around that. So our adult programming is really going to be taking off, I think, in 2019. And the series is actually called the Makers and Masters series. So the Makers course is a one-day 101 for all levels. And really, it's to really introduce the techniques of traditional craft or fine art. And then that will be followed up by a series of master classes for the artist inside all of us that wants to become more invested in an art form and would like to take a master class with someone who is an expert.
We are fortunate to have two of those artists around our table today, and you have a whole schedule, I'm sure. But introduce us to the two who are going to tell us about what's on offer.
Sure, we're so excited. We actually have Mel Rosato here, who's our curatorial assistant at the museum, but she's also an artist, and she's a bookmaker. So she'll be teaching that. And Peg McDade, who has been with the museum for a very long time, and she is a fiber artist. So she'll be teaching a makers and masters class as well.
Well, Peg, we'll start with you because you've been there so long. What do you love about being associated with the Everhart Museum?
I'd say the general populace, everybody that comes there. It is for everyone, not only in the Lackawanna County, but anybody who can get in a car or a bicycle and get there. Good people there.
What have you done in the past, and what are you looking ahead to this time?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Erica, for being around this beautiful table. And also Steph Colarusso for inviting me to be a member of her team. And thank you for an opportunity to speak about the fibers as an art form. For me, it's the concept that daily motivates me as an artist and as a teacher. I am dedicated to having people design from scratch, right out of their hearts, and get the skills in order to make what they believe in, what they think about, what they feel about, and have it come forth through a medium. Our medium right now is fiber, whether it's cotton or silk or linen or bamboo or man-made fibers, whatever it is, or recycled items. Whatever it takes to make your thoughts and feelings visible to everybody else.
So that could manifest as a tapestry, or it could be something to wear?
Yeah. Well, whether it's for your wall or for your body or for the floor, it has to be well-designed, using the proper materials to make that function available and durable. And then with that comes an innate beauty, because you've chosen the right materials for the function. And from that function, it all comes together, especially if you can put your heart in it.
You all may not know, but Peg was the very first artist in residence here at WVIA on radio. So we had a visual artist in residence on radio, and Peg brought a whole assortment of looms, from little ones to big ones, and lots of examples. Peg, what kinds of apparatus related to the fiber arts will people be working with?
Well, they may choose from very small tools to very big tools. These skills, which will be ongoing, I like to have it work like my studio works. Everybody's doing something different, and they really love to do it. So it could be interlooping skills, which are knitting and crocheting. They're all interlooping yarn. And stitchery. We'll have stitchery, which will be applique or reverse applique, and needle weaving. They will be available. Also, you mentioned various looms. I will be bringing two small looms, which will be available for people to work on if they just want to play around for a while. But I would like them to focus on which of these four skill levels that they would, you know, pick that and stay with it.
So they could do something that would evoke American folk traditions, such as we might see in the museum. That might be an inspiration, or something abstract and modern and evocative of whatever, as you say, is an interest in
yes,
there.
Erica, can run the gamut of what you're interested in. I certainly hope that the master class, which we will be having first, will generate some interest, and people will continue on into the master class, from makers to master.
And books. Tell us about your fascination with books and how you make it an art form.
Well, book arts is actually a very historical fine art form, and a lot of people don't think of books that way. But what I love about book arts is that it's extremely flexible with vision. You know, you could do something very economical and simplistic and like a very clean book with, you know, very intricate bindings, or you can do a book that takes a whole new form. It's a sculptural book, you know, so you have a huge range of things you could do with book arts, which I think really lends itself to this program, because we can do something nice and simple and introductory that gets people interested in book arts, but then we can build on it and do something a little bit more exaggerated, give them a little bit more freedom in the master's classes.
How did you get drawn to working in this way?
Well, one of my mentors that I studied under at Keystone College, Sally Toasty, she is a book artist and taught me a lot about that, and I eventually took classes with her in book arts at Keystone, and it just blossomed from there. It's one of the most interesting art forms I've ever been able to be a part of. And she does some of the most amazing things I've ever seen. So it's really great to get to work under someone who you admire like that. And then, you know, you can recreate things that they've made in your own way, or just learn even the smallest things from them that'll help you every time you make a book. You like simple tips that some people wouldn't know on their own.
And does this mean that at some point, someone who's got the bug like you do would wind up making your own paper?
Yes, you could absolutely make your own paper. I think a great class for the future would even be to make your paste papers, because that way you use paper that's already made. You don't have to do the whole pulping process that could be very long and a little bit more complex and using chemicals and things like that. But when you make paste paper, you design your own paper. So you'll use a plain sheet of paper that you already have, and then you could make a design on top. It's a pretty simple method. You use distilled water and things like that and acrylic paint that's watered down. So it's not a complex process to go through, but you could have some very complex results.
Our classes, Mel's class and my class, are both for beginners through the most experienced people. Do not feel like somebody is going to be doing a lot better than you are. That's not going to happen. Everybody is taken care of at the level that you enter.
I also want to mention Mel has also created our zine library, which is fairly new to the museum.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, zines are actually one of the most introductory things you can do with book arts. They are very versatile and very easy to make. So we started a zine library this past summer at the Everhart Museum. So basically that consists of zines from people from all over our area as well as nationally. So we took submissions in. They're all donations, which is wonderful. Some of very fantastic zine artists donated pieces to have shown in our museum. So it's on display in the museum, and people can come in and see it whenever they want. They don't have to make appointments like with our normal library that we have in the museum. So zines basically have been used for like grassroots political movements and things like that in the past, but as time went on, they really evolved to be about anything. People do narratives, people do personal stories. Some zines even just look like a small novel, like a little bit more formal. But we are really excited to be able to have that at the Everhart, so then people can get acquainted with them more than they would somewhere else.
We have experienced perhaps conventions, zine conventions, or coming together in Scranton. Haven't there been a celebration in that way?
Yes, absolutely. Jessica Mione actually plans a zine fest every year. She's been doing it for about 8 years, I think, now. And I actually sell at Zine Fest, and she's been fantastic and actually worked with us a lot to make the zine library possible. So things like that happen all over the country, and it's really exciting to see them happening locally now, too.
Steph, what other things? Are these the two, or are there going to be more?
I actually am teaching a class as well. I am a traditional Pisanki artist, and coming up to Lent and Easter, I will be hosting a class at the museum. I've been teaching for at least 10 years now, but I've been doing the art of Pisanki from age 4 over a coal stove. So it is something I'm really passionate about. And I just taught a class over the holiday, and we actually made ornaments, and we based our designs off of the Dorflinger glass collection. So it was really fun. So we'll find some more inspiration in the collection for the next series, and I'm really excited to teach again.
Now, does that mean it was family members passing along the skill to you?
It's a tradition in our family. My grandmother taught me with a pencil and a small nail at the end over the coal stove with some wax. Now I like to use a Kiska, your traditional tool. But yeah, I'm teaching my children as well. So it's a family tradition we're passing along, and I'm so proud to be able to pass it to my children as well.
It's critical, especially here in our area, to keep those crafts and arts alive in that way. Anything else?
We also have a glass artist. Gina Rice is her name, and she'll be teaching a course as well on glass fusing. So we actually have a tab established on our website. So it's www.everhart-museum.org. The link is to our Makers and Masters series underneath our education tab on the website page. We also have regular posts on Facebook. So I always encourage people to be friends with us on social media. We post on Instagram as well and Twitter. And you could also call my office to register, which is 570-346-7186, extension 516.
You're always watching out for the little ones, but don't you find now, Steph, as you were suggesting as you began, that people, particularly retired people, are seeking to develop their creativity to expand in that way?
Absolutely, yeah. And we've established a new class actually for seniors as well. It's called the Evergreen Senior Arts Club. So once a month on a Thursday night, we have an artist in residence, Elizabeth Perry Feist, who actually takes them on a tour, the students on a tour of our museum collection. We have a great discussion based on one piece, and then the artwork is in response to the discussion. So that class, we've been lucky enough to have it funded by the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts.
Stephanie Colarusso, Director of Programs and Events. Francesca Saldan, newly appointed curator. Peg McDade, distinguished fiber artist and teacher, and Melanie Brizzato, curatorial assistant and book artist, speaking with us about the Everhart Museum and the Makers and Masters series that will get underway this weekend. There are a number of offerings, and we'll run through the schedule for you now briefly. The Saturday, February 16th workshop, this Saturday, is Introduction to Pisanki with Stephanie Colarusso. That gets underway at 2 o'clock. On Thursday, February 28th, it's Altered Books with Melanie Rosato, another of our guests today, and that gets underway at 5:30. Saturday, March 9th, it's Fiber Arts at the Everhart with Peg McDade at 2 o'clock. Saturday, March 9th at 2 o'clock, Fiber Arts. Thursday, March 28th, it's Introduction to Fused Glass with Gina Rice, and that's at 5:30. And then the master's workshops that follow from these one-time experiences. Saturday, February 23rd and March 2nd, The Art of Pisanki. Next, March 7th and 14th, Matchbooks and Soft Cover Journals with Mel Rosato. Fiber Arts with Peg McDade, getting underway Saturday, March 16th, and continuing into April on Saturdays at 2. And Stained Glass and Fused Glass with Gina Rice, getting underway Thursday, April 4th, and continuing to the start of May. All these details, as we heard from Stephanie, are online, and it's everhart-museum.org, and Everhart is spelled E-V-E-R-H-A-R-T, everhart-museum.org, and updates on Facebook. The Everhart Museum of Natural History, Science, and Art, 1901 Mulberry Street in Scranton in Naog Park, everhart-museum.org. Плачу чужу щиру, даю милий зад.